Welcome to the Diamond Da Vinci's podcast, a show dedicated to the artistry and science of sports field management and celebrating the groundskeepers who create those masterpieces. The Diamond Da Vinci's podcast is brought to you by Beacon Athletics for over 68 years providing solutions for sports field managers. And on today's show, we're going to be talking about women in sports turf, one particular woman who won a major award this year. We will talk to her about her work in inspiring other women to get into the turf industry.
So join us today for our Out of the Park interview with Nicole McFadden. She is the head groundskeeper with the Baltimore Orioles. And you kind of know who she is, right, Paul? You've heard of her before?
I have a little bit of a familiarity with her, yes.
When did you first meet Nicole?
I met her in 1999, my last full year as the Oriole head groundskeeper. Her class from University of Delaware had come, their irrigation class came to the park to take a tour of our PAT system, our prescription athletic turf system, which was at that time a pretty big deal. They're not as big a deal anymore, yes. And so she was there on that tour, and at the end of the tour, she came by and asked me for, they were on their way out of the park, and she ran back to my office and asked if she could get a business card of mine. And I said, are you interested in this kind of work? And she said, yeah. And I said, well, give me a call if you think you want to do an internship or something, we can take care of you here. Well, she didn't call till after I left. I left at the end of May in 2000, and she called, I think, that following August or something like that, and talked to Al, and Al said, well, he's no longer here, but hey.
But I'll take you.
Yeah, exactly. So that's how we met, and that's how we knew each other.
I met her at her first STMA meeting back in around 99. Yeah.
You wouldn't have met her then.
Or would have been 2000.
Actually, I think it was 2001 was the first one that she went to, yes. Yeah.
50 and then years ago, you know.
Yeah. And that's when women were exploding into the STMA time. Now,
relatively speaking, of course.
Relatively speaking, yeah. I mean, if I remember the STMA shows pre that, the only women we typically saw there in the industry were either through businesses that were selling their goods or in academia. Yes. We certainly had some women in academia at the time. But actual sports turf managers, you were one of the first ones there, and you were at the time. I think you were still in school at that point?
I was still a student.
And there's a student.
I was a junior.
As was Rachel Sager, who eventually became Rachel Volkening, who eventually became the assistant head groundskeeper for the Brewers for a while. And then who was the other one? Was it Abby McNeil?
Abby McNeil. Yep.
Yeah. Were the three
a couple years later, Heather Nabosny started joining us as well. Yeah.
But by that time, by the late 90s and into the early 2000s is when you just saw this explosion of women into sports turf. And now you go to the Sports Turf Managers Conference, and it's just amazing how many women now are in it, which is really cool.
Yeah, it's nice. It's not worth commentary anymore, which is nice. I mean, that's a good place
to be. It's become a natural thing.
Yeah.
And so that's been fantastic. And who we want to talk to today is somebody who has received an award this year for her inspiration to women in her line of business. And so with us here today is somebody who I personally am very proud of. I've watched her come up through the ranks of the turf industry, and somebody who I think is a very inspiring and well-deserved of any award that she receives, and that would be Nicole McFadden, who is the head groundskeeper for the Baltimore Orioles with us today. Nicole, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Well, we're thrilled to death to have you. So in March, you received this award, the Mary Pickersgill Award for Women's Leadership in Business. And was that a huge shock to you when you were called and told that you were going to be getting this award?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you hear women in business, and, you know, with our industry, I don't really think about the business side of it. I think about more of, you know, the labor and that stuff first before business would even come into play. It was a huge shock.
Yeah, I imagine it was also pretty humbling. You know, you would think, well, if
I
get an award.
Yeah, this is a pretty big award in Maryland.
Yeah.
Yes. And for her to, to be a representative of that award is a really big deal. I mean, a lot bigger than I even thought it was. I mean, I didn't really know too much about Mary until, you know, I was awarded this. So it was inspiring.
It's a fairly young award. You're only the fourth person to be awarded it. They started issuing the award in 2012. And for the folks out there who are not from Maryland, want to describe to them who Mary Pickersgill is?
Well, Mary Pickersgill was a flag maker in the 1800s, and she was a woman who owned her own business back in that time. So she was the one who sewed the flag that inspired or that hung at Fort McHenry that inspired Francis Scott Key to write our nation's Star-Spangled Banner.
That's and on top of that, she went on after that, if I recall, she became president of the Impartial Female Humane Society. Sorry,
not affiliated with the Humane Society of today.
Yes, this was
right,
geared
right.
more towards women back in those days in the middle 1800s. That, you know, that the poor, that the elderly women and the destitute women of that time had ways of seeking employment and job training, if I recall correctly.
Right. So, such a time where women weren't, you know, business owners. You know, Mary went out of her way to really help the women that were widowed or destitute, like you said, and, you know, get them started in their own path so they didn't have to depend on somebody else to take care of them.
Right. Right, and at a time, of course,
there weren't many options at that time.
Yeah, at a time there were not that many women working to begin with, besides keeping a homestead.
Right.
So yeah, you know, you think to yourself, well, you know, if I'm going to get awards, it's probably going to be in the turf profession or something like that. And then suddenly, this business award comes around, but it's really about inspiring people, and you're an inspiration to a lot of women now. And of course, certainly the other head groundskeeper in the Major League Baseball, Heather Novosny, because you've reached the peak of your profession. Tell us how you try to inspire other women to go for their biggest goals in life.
Well, you know, being a pioneer in this field, just like Mary was when she was, in the 1800s, a businesswoman, you do what you have to do. You know, you don't rely that, you know, there's an industry out there that has barriers that you can't do what other, you know, men can do. You know, so me being a pioneer in this field, I feel like, you know, I'm not writing reports or like, I don't know, being like this groundbreaking scientist for any reason in like the turf industry, but I am present out there on that field in front of 48,000 fans every night. So, you know, when I walk out onto that field and there are little girls or women that see me in a predominantly male-dominated field, I think it would inspire somebody to say, hey, you know, I never thought that I could do this kind of job or that this was a job for women or women can do this, you know, that kind of thing. So being an inspiration in that way, kind of a silent inspiration, is, I don't know what I feel like I represent out there every day.
Mm-hmm. What now? You've had some women on the crew. Something that I wasn't able to do when I was out in Baltimore back in the 90s and mid 80s. We just didn't have the facilities for women at that time. And to be honest with you, in the mid 80s and early 90s, there really weren't a lot of women who were interested in getting into the industry. It wasn't until later in my career that really started to happen. But you've had some come on. Now, how many women have you had on your crew over the course of the past 10 years that you've been head groundskeeper there? Can you recall?
Pretty much for women that studied actual turfgrass science at various universities, I think it was about three. Mm-hmm. And then I have at least five collectively of women that are on my park crew, which, you know, is just a game day help.
Now here's the big question.
It's very young, you know.
Yeah. So here's the big question. Some of those young girls who are on the TARP crew, which are, for those who don't know, the Orioles TARP crew is pretty much made up of high school kids for the most part. Have any of those come to you and said, you know, after being here, I've kind of thought about maybe getting into this. Have you had any of those instances yet?
Not yet from the TARP crew.
You
know, I had women that want to work in sports management, but not typically turfgrass science.
Yeah.
A lot have taken interest in
yeah.
what we do out here on a daily basis. But, you know, they're still fairly young, you know, starting their first or second year in college. So, I mean, who knows what, you know, back then or going into that early phase of college, you really don't know what you
Most,
really want to do and
yeah.
like, get your little fire.
Ended up
right.
in turf.
Yeah.
yeah. Well, that's really cool. And
you know, and if I could backtrack, you know, like our industry call is, you know, it's really not as well known as a lot of other industries for women, you know, and the more that it's being talked about with social media and, you know, interviews and doing things like this, I think it gets our industry out as a whole. So, you know, our industry is fairly young as far as professional jobs. So I think as we go on, you know, more women will be, you know, able to study and do something or pursue a career in turf.
Well, and then there is so much opportunity right now in our industry. There is so much of a need for people to get into our turf industry to become head groundskeepers because there's a lot of demand in that business right now. And since the recession, we've had a considerable drop in people in the turf programs at colleges, and hopefully we can get those numbers back up because we need those people to fill the places of people like me who have retired or gotten out of that industry or people who are going to be getting out of the industry. We need people to fill those spaces. Now, I remember back in the mid-90s when women just started getting into the turf industry. I mean, I remember going to the STMA conference and the first time we had women there, we had three women there. And now by 2000, there were tons of women in there. And so the growth exploded. And now you go to the Sports Turf Managers Conference show and there are a ton of women there. And it's so cool to see, we've got that many women interested in the profession. So I think they're there. And hopefully that continues to expand, and hopefully you play a big part in helping to motivate those women to choose this profession. Let's move on beyond that now, Nicole, and talk a little bit about your life as a head groundskeeper with the Orioles now. Again, you've been there 10 years as the head groundskeeper. You've been there. How many years total have you worked for the Orioles?
So 13 years with the, I think this is like my 14th year in professional baseball. I did three seasons in Trenton, New Jersey with a double A team. So I don't know, you know, they all run together, Paul.
Yeah.
all the years. So August of 2001.
Yeah. You're getting to that amount of time that I've been in that I was in the industry, which is kind of scary. But,
been a long time.
Yeah, it has been. And I remember way back when you first came in to tour our complex, back when I was head groundskeeper there, you were with an irrigation class, wasn't it? For while you were in turf school?
Yeah,
while you're in
irrigation class in college.
Yeah.
Yep.
And you're
in college. So
yeah, in college. But you were majoring in ag, right? Not in turf.
Right. Yeah. We didn't have a turf specific major. We just had a general agriculture, and I was trying to find my way. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I wanted to be an agronomist or a crop scientist or some crazy thing, you know, that a city girl, you know, doesn't typically do. So when we came to View Camden Yards and your irrigation system here, it was pretty impressive. And then I was like, wow, you know, maybe golf course would be my route. And I did that for a year or two. And then I was like, well, I really ball, and I played in college. I played softball. So I wanted to mix my passion and, you know, my love for science. And that's how, you know, the turf industry was introduced.
I have a quick question. When you started in Baltimore, you inherited a very closely knit, tightly knit family. How did you come into that as the new, so to speak, head of household? How did you, you know, make that work for you? It's not like coming into a field where you've got a heavy union. And so that's a totally different dynamic. You know, you guys there, you know, Paul created such a tightly knit group. You know, was your strategy,
My group was gone.
Not all of them, Paul. Not all of them. And enough of the feeling still survived. I mean, you know, it's not like she came in and cleaned house, like what happens a lot in a lot of fields.
Right. The traditions that were used when Paul, you were here, were handed down, and they're still used today. And a lot of that is from, you know, myself keeping that alive, but also from the standards set here with, you know, the Orioles. And we do things similar to what Paul did when he was here. Our base paths are only about 3.5 feet wide. That's rare. We cut our foul area, our foul line shorter, about 7/8, 7 inch. That was a tradition that was handed down to me as well. The outlining of the field, the crew, the way we dress, the way we work hard, every day is kind of like what was instilled in us from the beginning. And I say us because, you know, I feel I'm part of that legacy that was handed down. So, yeah, coming in, I didn't really have to clean house. It wasn't a union crew and having to deal with, you know, the obstacles that can pertain to like having a new crew in place and making it, so to speak, my way. It was just traditions that were handed down from, I want to say, Memorial Stadium that we still utilize to this day. And, you know, that's what our front office expects. That's what our ownership expects from us in the way we perform and work on the field every day.
Now, a lot of people don't know that you played softball in college. Did you play all 4 years softball, or how long did you play?
No, I played for our 2-year school. It was Delaware Technical and Community College.
Right.
It was a 2-year college that I went to before graduating from University of Delaware. And I walked onto the team and, you know, played 2 years there. And my second year, I was all-region, all-star, and I batted 367, which my husband still doesn't believe to this day. But I made the region team, and it was fun. And we went to I think we lost a round. It's been so long. We lost a round before going to the Junior College World Series.
Wow,
that's
cool.
So that was pretty. That was fun. Pretty fun.
And,
yeah.
And your position that you primarily played?
I played first base.
First base. Okay.
I was an outfielder in high school, but I tore my shoulder up, so first base was where I landed.
So you played all through high school then as well?
Yes.
Okay, very cool.
Yeah, pretty much since I was 6 years old.
Wow, that's amazing. So that explains why you had that love for the game and the spark that, because I remember, you know, when you were there on that visit, you came back just as everybody was leaving and you came up to me and said, can I get your card? And I said, yeah. I said, are you interested in this? He goes, yeah, I think this is something I might like to do.
Right.
So it's I always wondered, what was it that clicked in your head that made you suddenly think that you might like to do this?
Well, you know, going through school, you know, as a child, you're just sort of, as a young adult, you don't really know what you want to do. You're kind of like faced with all these decisions and it's overwhelming, but you know, when I found out that you can mix, you know, science with doing something fun like sports, then I was sold. You know, it's not really taught to you that you can do, you know, you can do some careers that are fun and, you know, work hard at it. I don't know how to put that into words, but, you know, I always thought like science, you had to be in a lab or in the field, you know, working with plants and stuff like that. I didn't know, like, you can do it on a baseball field. So I was introduced to that, and that there was a different sport other than just golf courses is what they, like, you know, constantly throw in your face in
exactly.
this type of industry in college. You know, I never grew up near a golf course. I appreciated the beauty, but I didn't understand the game, and I wasn't really into the game. But when you throw grass on a baseball field, I get that. You know, yeah. I get the dirt. I get the way that, you know, the pitchers need their mound to be as perfect as possible for their bodies to handle that trajectory and that speed that they're throwing. So, you know, I could appreciate what a field holds. And then utilizing the science background, then that just sold me. And when I came in and I asked you for the business card, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I thought golf course was the only job for me out there. But after working 2 years on a golf course, I was like, I need something more fulfilling. And that's when I decided to call. Yeah. And you had moved on from then. But I remember the conversation. Al called me back and he said, you know, I said to him in the message, I'm just wondering if there's an internship available for the following season. This was July of 2001. And he called back. He said, we have one now. Can you be here in 2 weeks? And I remember putting in my 2 weeks notice and, you know, going on a wing and a prayer and moving to Baltimore. And then it just kind of like was fate, in my opinion.
And what amazes me about that whole thing, Nicole, is that for a while you were still in school while you were working down in Baltimore and you were going back and forth to classes in Delaware, weren't you?
I did, yeah. When I did my internship, obviously it was, I started my internship in August. So you only had really at that time, the Orioles weren't doing that well. We weren't going to the postseason. So the last game was September, end of September. And, you know, I took a semester off to finish that internship. And then at the end of the internship, which was over in December, I said to Al, I was like, you know, I'm going to probably either, I graduated with my 2-year degree. Already when I first took the internship. And then when I said to Al, you know, I think I'm going to go back and either pursue my 4-year bachelor's degree or pick a job on a golf course. I was offered a job as an assistant superintendent in Laurel, New Jersey. And then he said to me, he's like, wait, I don't want you to take that job. I want you to work here. We have an assistant job open. Would you be willing to do that? And then I said, well, you know,
that's cool.
I really want to, for myself, I'd really like to go back to school and finish my bachelor's degree because, you know, who would have thought I'd be a head groundskeeper in this industry? I mean, you're kind of groomed to know that it's a long shot before you would be a head groundskeeper in the major league. So for me personally, having that bachelor's degree, I could go do anything if this never worked out.
And
he said, you know, well, let us work with you. And I was hired on full time and I went to school every day about an hour each way to finish my bachelor's degree, which was not too long, maybe about a semester or two left on that. And I did that every day and came back and worked the games. It was hard. It was hard working
no doubt
in this industry and then getting up and driving an hour, going through like labs and, you know, all those big classes and then coming back and finish working. And, you know, I think I cried when it was all over because I was just so exhausted and overwhelmed. And finally, okay, now I can, if this industry didn't work out for me, at least I have something to fall back on, you know, my 2-year degree as well as my 4-year degree. And it's in general ag, so I can go and do anything. And that's what was more satisfying to me than just like completing that task.
But aren't you, looking back now, all these years later, aren't you so proud of yourself for the sacrifices you made to do that? I mean, that's...
I am, because I knew, like, I don't know what it is, and I can't explain it to anybody. I knew at that moment when I was here, looking at that irrigation system back in, like, 1998 or 99, like,
99,
I knew I was supposed to be here. And I didn't know what facet it was going to take, but I knew I was in the right place for the right reason. And, you know, my journey taking me to the golf courses that I worked in and having the internship and then the assistant position here and then going on to New Jersey and taking that step to leave Major League Baseball, which everybody thought I was crazy, and then coming back. I mean, it just all worked out. I don't know how to explain it.
Yeah. You fought me on it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You weren't too happy with me for a while, I know, but But no. I've just been a big fan of yours for so long. You've just done such a tremendous job there.
Thank you.
So that you actually had another job offered, like you just said, in golf work. Where was that assistant's job in golf?
Well, when I was first here at Camden Yards, it was at a country club in Laurel, New Jersey. I was offered an assistant superintendent role. And, you know, at that time I was 21, 22, or I don't know how old I was, but the money seemed great. And then, you know, I get offered the job here and I was like, okay, well, I'll just take this. And, you know, I don't know how to explain it. Like, you know, money, big salaries at that age, you know, are very enticing, but
absolutely.
I chose the lesser salary and to get me to where I am today. You know, there was really not much more I could do at that point in time. I had a job offer. I could stay in Major League Baseball as an assistant or I could finish school and do both. So It was a lot on my plate at that time. And I think I made the right decision. But then when I was in Trenton, you know, at the end of the year, I think it was my third season, you know, in Trenton, you're by yourself. You don't really have, well, in the minor leagues, you're by yourself. You have maybe one or two people that help you throughout the season. But in the off season, it's mainly you. Well, it was just me at that time. And I remember just painting these like railings. And, you know, I don't know if it was the oil paint fumes or what, but I was just like, all right, this is it. I'm not doing this anymore. This is ridiculous. I can't believe I have to paint railings. You know, I didn't work hard to go to school for, you know, you have all those like battles in your head, you know, even though it's like work that needs to be done, you're just kind of conflicted. And I went online and, I applied for a job that was an assistant superintendent position in Maui, Hawaii. And as luck would have it, I mean, the way things worked out, it's crazy. So as luck would have it, the superintendent was from Princeton, New Jersey. And he said, I got your resume. I'm actually flying back home for my sister's wedding. Would you like to meet up? I'd like to interview you in New Jersey. And I said, sure, why not? And I had the interview. Everything went great. I was so excited about like the potential opportunity. And I mean, come on, Maui, Hawaii at 24, 25 years old, who wouldn't take that chance, you know, mowing greens, while overlooking the Pacific Ocean and, you know, just amazing. And,
it sounds
amazing, you know, oh, it sounds great, you know. So I was thinking, well, I knew the price of living. I did all my research, and I was like, hey, why not? You know, I'm young, I'm single. Why not do it for a year? I got nothing to lose. It's an opportunity. So anyway, I'm still painting these rails because it took like a month to do it. And I get a phone call from the superintendent, and he's like, you know, we'd like to offer you the job, and it's at this X amount of money. And, you know, think about it. We'd love to have you here. We're looking for a start date of this. And the very next day, I got a phone call from the Baltimore Orioles saying, you know, we've been following your career. We have a position open here with the Orioles. We'd love for you to come down and interview. It's for the head groundskeeper position. And I was like, oh, my God. Like, how, like, now I'm, like, faced with, okay, do I go to my dream of Major League Baseball or do I get out of the turf industry or the sports industry altogether and go into the golf industry. So I was kind of conflicted with that and, you know, I was just weighing all the pros and cons. And I obviously decided to come back here and, you know, sometimes, some days I look back and think, you know, well, it would have been nice to enjoy that island life for a short moment, but I'm happy with the decision that I made.
Think about the bragging rights that your parents have. And that's really where it all comes down to, you know, the parents love to brag about that kind of stuff. So,
well, what was behind the decision to go to Trenton? Obviously you had a good reason for doing it. I'm just curious because I agreed with that reason when you and I had talked about it at one point in time, because not everything is magic in Major League Baseball, you know?
No, and like, you know, this is going back to the early 2000s. So like the industry as a whole was still unknown, you know, to a lot of people. You had people that were head groundskeepers in Major League Baseball that clearly were not moving on and hadn't moved on in such a long time. So like out of 30 teams, like your chances of being a head groundskeeper in the major leagues were rare. Okay. And so when I was having a conversation with the head groundskeeper here at the Orioles, at Katzoff, and he said to me, he's like, you know, in order to make it to the major leagues, you really have to prove yourself at the minor leagues as a head groundskeeper. And I took that to heart, and I was like, you know, I want to see if I could do this job on my own without having the head groundskeeper to take the fall for everything. I want to see if I can actually do this position without, you know, not any help, but like, you know, having it solely on my responsibility. And that's when I decided to try it in Trenton and prove to myself, if not everybody else, that, you know, I am here for, you know, the industry. I want to make a difference on these fields and, you know, keep it up to a professional level that I was, you know, taught from the beginning. So that's what kind of drove that decision to go. I wanted to maybe prove it to myself that I could do it more so than anything else.
I want to expose one of Nicole's hidden talents before we leave her today.
Nicole, if it's bad, I'll edit it out.
She knows what I'm going to bring up because I'm just amazed by it. And Nicole, tell the audience what it was you were doing while you were at school in ag for research, what you had to do as a research assistant.
Yes. So I worked, during school and also a summer with the University of Delaware Research and Education Center in their weed science department. And our job was to go out to these like corn fields and take these quadrants and plot weeds. And just to see, they did testing for herbicides, you know, before they actually came out onto the market and spraying for that stuff. So part of my job was to sit in a cornfield underneath the corn stalks and sweat your butt off and be introduced to insects that you never thought existed and count weeds at like the seedling level. So my hidden talent is I can tell what kind of weed it is with just one leaf coming out of the shoot. So very teeny tiny. I mean, we would collect petri dishes of dirt, put them in an autoclave, and pick through the dirt and pick out weed seeds, the seed itself. And I can identify them that way. That's how good we were at doing it. So,
and that's the part that just amazes me, that you can take a seed and tell.
That's not even like an eighth of an inch big, and or like the weed seedling, it's not even an eighth of an inch, you know, in height, and I can tell what it is. And the seed itself, I can identify without, you know, looking it up too much, but. Yep, that's my talent, and
pretty
a lot of
stuff.
Days spent sweating in that corn stalks and soybeans and name it, I was in it.
And what was the invention? You talked about how you had many a boring days in the lab going through these picking out these weed seeds out of soil, and you said there would be strange subjects of what you guys would talk about.
Oh my gosh, we would have. Turf industry worker can. You know, you're bored. You think about a lot of things on a mower that you don't even want to know about the things I thought about in Trenton, you know, how to escape the ballpark if I needed and all this stuff.
What was the you came up with?
So we were sitting there and we were talking about like one thing that we could invent. And this one guy was talking about how he would invent like this keg that you could drive around to parties. But the only, I don't know. It was just crazy. And then I said, well, I would invent eye contacts that were sunglasses, you know, because I hated wearing sunglasses, especially I have light eyes, so like the sun affects me, but glasses fall off your head, they're annoying. And I tried to invent sunglasses that were just eye contacts. I don't know how to put it, but I would call them sun tacks. I don't know, just stupid stuff you'd sit in a lab. And then like fast forward like 3 years later, I was watching the news and somebody invented it, and I don't know. It's just, I know it's not like a great conversation topic, but you know, you do when you're 8 hours on a rainy day in a lab picking out weed seeds in autoclave or petri dishes of dirt, you don't really have much to talk about. You come up with some strange things.
So. No, it makes sense to me. I remember some of those conversations. I totally get it.
Yes.
Well, Nicole, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. You know, as one of the true leaders of women in the turf grass industry, in the sports turf industry, I really should say. And I know there's a lot of people that do look up to you, and not to mention you just keep one hell of a ball field.
Thank you.
And so we appreciate having you on the show, and we hope to talk to you again soon.
Awesome. Thank you. Good to be here.
You know, I was at Camden Yards earlier this year for my annual pilgrimage back to my, I don't know what you want to call it, my roots, I guess.
Yeah.
I was back there in early July and walking through the Orioles clubhouse. They now have a huge picture of Nicole working on the field right in the main hallway as you're entering the, which is pretty cool to be recognized. It's an area, certainly I never received anything like that, but I also don't look as good as her.
I was just going to say.
I'm not the pretty face that she is. But not that that has anything to do with it, but I just thought that was really cool that they were saluting her there. And, you know, it kind of makes you feel like you are part of the team.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how good looking you are. If they don't respect you, they're not going to do something like that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, it's because of her work that they're allowed to do what they can do. And I just thought that was really cool. So
that is cool.
Just another inspiring piece about Nicole. But with that, we end another show. Yep, that's right, folks. That sound means it's in the books.
Don't miss a minute of our next show. Come and visit us at beaconathletics.com/podcast, where you can find our previous shows and tons of useful links. We'll have links today for some different websites about the Mary Pickersgill Award, as well as links to Nicole's articles talking about her achievement in that award. If you're a baseball junkie, don't forget to check us out at baseballtalkradio.com. We have shows there for every team, as well as now us, the groundskeepers. So everything you wanted to know about baseball, you can go and you can find very easily.
We'd love to hear from you, by the way. So if you wouldn't mind, you can email Teresa and I at podcast@beaconathletics.com. You can send us your questions, your comments, good or bad. But most importantly, show ideas. You can always send those along. We read every one of them.
And if by chance you're on Twitter, go ahead and check us out at Diamond Da Vinci's, at Diamond DAVINCIS. We're not crazy active there, but we post our links and talk about some different things regarding the show.
And remember, folks, the Diamond Da Vinci's podcast is brought to you by Beacon Athletics for over 68 years, providing solutions for sports field managers. And with that, folks, I bid you adieu.
Adios.